Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Representing for a second time, Whip Snakes Lacrosse Club!
Oh! Chase, was that you?
Yeah, it was, that was pretty crazy.
Scores! What?
It's still theirs until someone rips it out of their hands. The Archers are champions again.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour podcast alongside Chris Rosenthal. I'm Kevin Brown for Inside Lacrosse. Chris, we got a nice little off-season episode upon us. The festivities are here. The holidays are all around. How you doing first off? And how are you enjoying the what's been a pretty jam-packed PLL off-season so far?
Yeah, doing well, thank you. Happy to have some more kind of exciting PLL news to talk about. It's never boring for long, right? You might get a week off here and there, but something pops up out of nowhere that keeps us talking, and we love it.
The major storylines were referencing, of course, Andy Towers and his staff stepped down, in case you're haven't been following the news cycle from the Chaos Lacrosse Club in Carolina, of course. That story, Dan Arestra for Sticks in Lacrosse broke it on December 5th. McNair and myself did some digging and reached out to Coach Towers and Andy and as well as Rachel DeCecco from the PLL to kind of get the full story on and everything. And you know, this is kind of why I wanted to do this off-season podcast, Chris, is, you know, I haven't talked to you in a while. You know, like I talked to some people about this, but I needed to get your takes on some of the things that have been happening, specifically this big story. This is kind of it's not monumental in terms of, you know, every offseason there's been, I think virtually every offseason, maybe almost except one, there's been coach turnover in the Premier Lacrosse League. The way this got out, though, the way this was reported at first, sources telling Dan Arestra that the staff sat down together due to a disagreement surrounding an assistant. And his renewal slash the PLL trying to maybe make a change there. And Andy Towers sticking to his guns, loyal to his staff, didn't want to hear any of it, didn't really want to discuss it even. And Chris, just what did you make of both kind of the reporting and also, I think more important, not more importantly, but what's kind of taken by storm the social media and everything, just the fan reaction to it all?
Yeah, well, usually I think what we're kind of treated to on the outside of the kind of PLL going on is we get an announcement that, you know, the coach has stepped down, right? And that's that. That is, I think that's their preferred method of delivery. And, you know, sometimes there's more to it than that. Sometimes there's less, but the story we get is usually, you know, the tweet in the morning that says, you know, so-and-so isn't with us anymore. Thanks for your service. And then they keep it moving. But they didn't really have the luxury this time. And I think, you know, I think if Andy Towers is going to leave, this is the way Andy Towers is going to leave, right? He did it all on his terms, on his way out the door. Which is not in a quiet fashion. It's not an understated fashion, and it is not a fashion where he is comfortable being, you know, misunderstood, right? He wanted to get it out specifically. Listen, here's what happened. This isn't a thing where I just decided to, you know, abandon my team for another opportunity or something like that. So, yeah, you know, there was not this one wasn't going to be quiet. You know, some coaches go away quietly and some do not. And I think we all could have guessed he would be in the latter category of that. I think also this is probably.
Well, I would push back just on, like, he didn't really leave. Like, he was trying to leave quietly, rather. And just the way that the news broke and the way that, you know, so the Lacrosse Network posts that tweet, and obviously that really gets him going, you know, like splitting the losses between Chrome and Outlaws for one, but also keeping out the postseason success in that graphic. I think most fans know what we're referencing there. Just want to start to interrupt your spiel, but well, just wanted to interject.
So I think more so, I think if the story comes out that, well, I mean, I think the way that he presented it was that there was a difference of opinions and he wanted to go, right? Like, I think he contributed to what we learned about it more so than coaches traditionally do, which is general silence. You know, coaches generally leave and we don't hear anything else from them. But he had that chance if he really wanted it. I think we would have made some assumptions and fans would have filled in gaps with their theories or whatnot. But I think he was, willing to volunteer that information without it being dragged out of him. I think he did want us to know certain things. But yes, to what you're saying, as far as there was some bear poking on the part of TLN in that regard. Yes, they universally did him dirty in that sort of sense. That was wild, and I think the real question there is, you know, who ordered the code red to really kind of bury him on his way out the door? That's kind of unprecedented. And I would guess they're probably not going to do that with future coaches just because the reaction has been so overwhelmingly negative to that sort of approach. But I mean, for like what I was saying, I am curious to whose call that was, you know, if it was just maybe somebody just doesn't like the chaos, maybe somebody just doesn't like Towers, maybe they got rubbed the wrong way. You know, some PR hit job or something like that. PR being public relations, not any initials or anything of that matter.
Right.
Who's to say? Who's to say on that regard? But yeah, this was a fascinating time. Kudos to you and Matt and Dan for, you know, pulling the strings a little bit further, digging a little bit deeper than just what we were given.
Yeah, appreciate that. Major shout out to Restra, like you said there, without that kind of initial reporting, as you said, like a lot of times we just get the statements, and without those connections to kind of dig in and see what's actually going on, and that allowed us to dig a little deeper. So the big issue, and if you go through the comments of our Instagram post or what have you, you'll see like all these different takes and opinions, a lot of it negative towards the league. The major crux of the story, in my mind, and to give background for listeners who either A, didn't read the article, or B, see the Instagram post summarizing said article. November 18th, just to quickly go through the timeline here. So the Monday before Thanksgiving, Seth Tierney, who's in the PLL front office, calls up Towers, tells him about these negative reviews, says there's going to be a meeting next week in which the league will ask Andy to move on from offensive coordinator Matt Panetta following the kind of ugly end to the 2024 season, in which they scored a lowly record, one goal in the semifinal. Of course, Andy, Coach Towers defended his assistant who's been with him since day one in the league, right? Like, they were the number one seed in 2019. They were kind of handed this squad full of box players. They knew they weren't going to get them for the first third of every season. This is the first season that they try to move in a new direction to improve on their regular season success and try to get more cohesion. Of course, it did work for a few seasons there, right? Like, they got to the 2020 championship series title game. They got the 2021 title. They made it back to the 22 title game. They got another upset this very season in the quarterfinal round in Boston. against the Cannons, who had a heck of a season again. So, knowing all that context, the major crux of this story, and then they meet again a week later on that 25th, the Monday before Thanksgiving. Towers gives that defense in favor of his assistant, as well as that caveat that I kind of buried lower on in that story of, and I think it's kind of an important context, because I think diehard fans like you and I, who watch all these broadcasts, we see Annie Towers in the huddles. He's the one calling the plays, drawing the offensive scheme, and telling these offensive players what to do. It's the same thing during practice, right? But what Coach Towers let me know is the fact that Coach Panetta is way more involved than people think in terms of the creation and implementation of the offensive schemes throughout the week. Coach Towers just trusts himself to carry out that messaging and communication. I think that's an important message, something I didn't know, some context I didn't realize. And like, fans, take it as you will. Like, I don't know if you necessarily want to be more tied to the offense that scored one goal in that semifinal. But again, Panetta wasn't out there. He wasn't one kind of making mistakes and missing the cage, right? Like, he, as coaches, you can only do so much for these players. They've got to go execute. So they break for Thanksgiving. They come back next, the week after. Nothing's changed. And things go from there. The report comes out from Arestra, and there have it, right? Like, the Chaos staff, which Chaos fans, it makes sense that the fan outcry is a little bit more amplified for Towers rather than some past coach departures, when you consider just how entertaining he is on these broadcasts and social media clips. So the major crux of this story, the biggest issue I found trying to report on it, is the issue of how many players in this locker room wanted to change that offense coordinator? How many players were negative in their reviews in the, again, read the story for kind of the in-depth. We go into the annual survey the league gives out processes, and we go into Andy Towers. He kind of gives his own end-of-year survey as well. How many people in this locker room wanted a change, which, to my knowledge, team leaders were telling me that they did. And they wished it could have been addressed differently. Like, when Towers went back and forth with the league in defense of Panetta, like, they wish maybe he went back to them and kind of spoke to them about it before stepping down altogether.
And listen, from the league's perspective, they had been getting negative reviews from these annual player surveys the last couple seasons, so that's why they felt the time was now for making a change there. And for Towers, he wanted another year of a grace period with this kind of offensive philosophical overhaul in terms of the boxed style versus a more American styled offense, in which we saw a lot of growing pains this season.
So all in all, that's how things shook out. And it's kind of a principle the league is founded on, of we the players and player empowerment. And for old school coaches, it's like, if you get blamed for everything and kind of changes move that quickly, and a lot of people are respecting the loyalty Coach Towers showed to Panetta and his staff, and them all stepping down together kind of creates this opening for a kind of a group that is still amidst a an offensive rebuild. Defensively, they're still one of the best, as long as they tie up some loose ends in free agency, which we'll get on to later in the show. But Chris, I'll give you the floor. Any kind of reactions to that spiel?
Well, yeah, I think part of what makes this kind of especially interesting is it's really difficult to be treated to any sort of universally accepted understanding of the truth of how this played out. Because even talking about the player surveys, Towers himself, right, in you guys' piece kind of says, you know, he doesn't place any credibility on the player surveys, probably because he has his own surveys he issues.
Right.
But we're likely to encounter in that kind of situation, there might be some players who are way more comfortable going to, you know, their coach's boss and saying, I don't like how things are going. And, you know, in the same situation, you know, if Towers, say, confronts him and says, hey, you know, what's going on, fellas? You can tell me. Maybe they're like, oh, no, we're good. Don't worry about it. You know, fully knowing that he's not the decision maker necessarily in these regards, right? There's an ownership group here that listens to the players. And if the players want Panetta out or enough of them make that much noise, you know, the amount, I'm guessing there's a significant amount of pushback on Panetta from some of these players, right? Because I feel like if one guy says it, you know, then, you know, the higher ups are going to say, well, maybe you two just have a beef or something like that. Or maybe you're not happy with your playing time. I feel like there's enough squeaky wheel there to get this grease going where it's not just necessarily one or two people. But maybe that's all Towers heard, right? Because we don't really know how much feedback he got that wasn't, you know, maybe just watered down to be nice to him. Or, you know, maybe players just not comfortable directly addressing him in these matters. So he could directly think that it's not a big deal, whereas a ton of players feel like it is a big deal. And in their understandings, they're both 100% right. It is kind of an unfortunate way that it played out. If there's no sort of understanding between all parties exactly what took place. And yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be on the side that like, man, I wish this could have gone a little differently, you know? But that's just kind of the tricky situation when you have the sole ownership group that this league has, as opposed to something like, you know, the NFL or something like that. But conversely, I do want to say this, because that has been brought up a lot, kind of just saying, you know, oh, it's almost a curse the way that this thing is run out with this, you know, one group dealing with everybody. But that being said, if you were, say, like a pro football team, and you had one goal in a postseason game like that, it wouldn't be shocking if an offensive coordinator was let go. I don't think it would be that stunning if your favorite NFL team makes a change there, if they put up, you know, 3 points in the NFL or in the, you know, NFC, you know, final big playoff game or something like that.
Right.
So that's kind of big business of sports. Obviously, it's very different in this sort of situation, how it plays out. But these changes definitely happen. And I think it's kind of just a sign that people want it to be more like other sports in that sort of cutthroat sense. Was this handled 100% smoothly? Absolutely not. I don't think anybody would say that. But yeah, this is it's a tough business, I suppose, right?
Absolutely. Well said. And Rachel DiCecco said as much, right? These are fine margins in this league. And yeah, just the, excuse me, the fact that Chaos finished last in scoring offense, like, I did add the caveat, like, listen, it is kind of a new look offensive philosophy this season for them in a league where you don't get to really practice every day. There's going to be growing pains, so when you change systems for an offense that does practice every day, you can expect some growing pains for about a year. For an offense that doesn't practice, maybe only once before every game, you can expect it maybe a year and a half, couple of years, get the right personnel in there. And now we're left with an opening, Chris, that we recently had one last season. You kind of broke the story of Bill Tierney, if you remember, being hired by the Water Dogs. There are a bevy of candidates vying for that position. Chris, what have you heard / what do you think as we kind of move forward into the new year here will kind of happen with this opening?
Well, so first thing, I am dying to know, just like the fans are dying to know, who's next to take over the reins of the Carolina Chaos. I would stress one thing. I would stress kind of patience in that regard. I mean, it could come tomorrow. I don't know. But if you look at it like, we'll say like the Cannons, when they, you know, lost their coach and replaced their coach, Sean Quirk was out with the Cannons right around the same time. I think it was December 9th or so. And they announced Brian Holman right before that championship series in February. So this period of time here is not entirely unprecedented for us not to have an answer in that regard, especially because the Chaos, they're not playing in the championship series. You know, I mean, you do want a GM in place, you know, when free agency and these re-signings get going and things like that, but they're not really under the gun to get right down to it. Also, you got the holidays now. A lot of people running around doing a lot of different things.
I would expect it to the new year, but like you said, like you got to prep for March 3rd. That's the next off-season player movement for free agency and trades, what have you. That was kind of the complaints that were going around when Ben Rubior was being replaced with the Atlas, and they kind of waited to announce Mike Pressler until kind of after the spring. And Coach Brooks, he coached the championship series for them and did a great job in that inaugural series. So, yeah, just like you said, like patience and everything. But, yeah, remind kind of listeners who some of the names were in that pool for the Water Dogs last offseason and whether you think or not that they'll be around this year.
Yeah, so I'm inclined to think that they're, you know, it just seems like it'd be a waste of their time to get an entirely new pool if you have guys who made it to the finals of the last round of interviews or things like that, right? So obviously they like them to a degree. So, you know, the guys that we're looking at, again, the most likely candidates for the job would be, you know, talk about Joe Spallina. You just mentioned Stephen Brooks coaching Atlas. You know, he's had a good amount of interviews with these sorts of things before. He's certainly experienced as far as getting interviews. Yeah, he's gotten close. You know, there are some guys kind of, you know, Spencer Ford last time had the Water Dogs sort of interviews. And then there are a few other guys that I remember Terry kind of mentioned, Terry Foy, that is, when he rolled out, I think he listed 7 guys for the Water Dogs gig. You know, they had Brody Merrill, Anthony Kelly, guys who are less, I mean, I guess Ford is kind of outside, you know, looking at no direct involvement. But, you know, like Kelly hasn't been, you know, on the sidelines recently or anything like that. But the people, I will say this, the people I've spoken with are all still interested. You know, there aren't a lot of people who were turned off by the interview process and now they're like, screw it, I don't want to be a head coach. So yeah, a lot of these same guys are still interested. So it's just kind of a matter of who they want for the job and who they thought, you know, maybe just missed out last time and want to get back in the room again.
A name I've heard rumored out there, and I think
Diggs from Stick Talk was actually the one who mentioned this.
But Drew Snyder, the first year assistant for the Whip Snakes, has kind of been a name thrown out there, which is really interesting. He was just hired last year for Maryland, kind of leads an overhaul in terms of taking the ball out of Rambo and Zed's hands and giving, along with direction from Coach Staggs, the quarterbacking responsibilities to third-round draft pick and rookie of the year, T.J. Malone. So That would be a wild card, and I'm sure there are other wild cards out there, but you know, I'd like to do a couple podcasts this off season, so maybe we'll touch up more on the subject when the time is more near. But Chris, I want to bring up a couple trades to you.
All right.
Two trades, major happenings in this off season. One happened weeks ago. If not, it could have been months ago. I don't even remember how long this. November 7th. That's a long time. About a month and a half. And then just this past week, 1 week ago, was the trade deadline for this year, the 2024 postseason player movement deadline. Excuse me. So I'm referencing, of course, we'll go most recent. Zed Williams of the Maryland Whipsnakes traded for the Philadelphia Waterlogs rookie Matt Brandau and a third round pick swap. So there's that. And then the Pat Cavanaugh deal that involved a couple picks sent the Boston Cannons way after he requested to be dealt as Phil Shore from US Lax Mag detailed when he talked to Coach Brian Holman and Tim Sudan, I believe. So Dan Arestra was first to report that deal centered around Williams and Brandau. Again, the question I want to ask you, Rosie, if you're a GM in this league and you're wheeling and dealing, negotiations flying, and of course this isn't apples to apples, these two trades, but would you rather get a player in return, or are you kind of good with getting future picks and pick swaps for a star player like of Pat Cavanaugh's stature?
So I think a lot of these sorts of trades, as far as the picks go, I think it really depends on, I think it's all need based, right? Like if you have a little bit of flexibility, if you're not really feeling under the gun, then maybe go and get some picks, right? But if you feel like you need, you're one piece away or something like that, then it's like, okay, let me get this specific player in here with a bit of a resume so I know what I'm working with. Now, sometimes that's not as readily available if you're dealing with somebody, you know, entering a second season like a Pat Cavanaugh after a, you know, kind of sporadic first season, you know, he's kind of, you know, a little beaten down early, and then kind of, you know, figuring out where to go and what to do in his role on the offense and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. A little more so of the Zed versus Brandau kind of thing. You know, if you'd just kind of what your team feels that it needs, per se, because, you know, all what the different people bring to it, I think, is really kind of what's going to affect your strategy as far as what, if you even want picks or how many picks or things of that nature.
Right. I asked the question because I tweeted that out after the Cavanaugh trade. Yeah, I was surprised that Coach Brian Holman was unable to kind of get a player in return. And you look at the Cannons roster and how complete they were last year. It's like, who do they really need? They want to draft well. They want to build with from within. And I get that approach. And you look at what Coach Jim Stagnita did, and he saw a guy who is nearly 30 and 8 seasons in, just got his kind of trade value, if you will, back to its ceiling after an MVP caliber campaign in all seasons where Jeff Teat doesn't have as great of a season as he had. In Zed Williams, and if you've been watching the start to the NLL season, he's been crushing it with the Mammoth. He's been scoring air gates every weekend. So he still got it. And then you look at a guy like Matt Brandau, it's a deal of the just absolute height of Zed Williams' value versus the upside potential for Brandow and his ability, because you didn't really see it in that crowded Philly offense in his debut season. But he's the all-time Ivy League point scorer. Like, he he can flat-out produce, and when you put him with another guy you can flat-out produce, and DJ Malone, that is an exciting future for Whipsnakes fans. So, for me, I think it makes more sense for Stagnita and the Whips when you consider that. And the questions I just have with, all right, now you have Zed Williams, Michael Sowers, Kieran McArdle just re-signed an extension through the 27 season, and the number one pick. You gotta go with CJ Kirst at number one. Everyone will be up in arms if not. So where does CJ play? Where does Zed play? Where do you think they should play? Go.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation that Tierney and the boys kind of put themselves in, right? You know, you understand the vision behind wanting to kind of shore up that third spot based on last year, but you're not really comparing Brandow to Zed in that regard. They've got a whole bunch of traffic down at attack already. And now it made sense if you took Brandow based on kind of the concern that maybe you don't get a full year out of Sowers, right? You'd seen a little bit of outdoor injury incident, championship series injury incident. You say, yep, okay, I've got a dynamite fourth option ready to go if we have to miss him for a couple of games.
Which is what he called Brandow when he drafted at the end of the first round. And it's like, hey, he's a elite insurance policy for kind of my MVP of the team in Sowers. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, Sowers really just kind of demonstrated that he was just fine this year. So you say, all right, thanks. And you figure Brandow can move in that regard. But getting Zed back in return, clearly, like you're just kind of saying, really just offers more questions than answers. As far as what you're going to do with four of them, you know, assuming Philly picks up Kirst and doesn't try to, you know, deal that pick for a king's ransom that, you know, I don't know, shores up everything else they could possibly dream of. I really don't know. It seems a little... I mean, do you do a thing like Stags did a tiny bit last season where you kind of say, okay, Zed, come out of the box, or we'll just, you know, kind of categorize you as a midfielder? I think that window certainly gets smaller and smaller as the years go by, and that's not generally what we've seen from him anyway. It really seems like, I don't want to call it a bad idea, but it does seem like one where if they don't have some sort of vision in place, they're going to find themselves with a bit of a traffic jam there. Because the guys they have don't really seem to be going anywhere. You know, you're not moving McArdle, you're not moving Sowers. So yeah, you know, I wish I had a great understanding or answer as to what their vision was going to be. But they clearly wanted to secure Zed's services in that spot. Do you have any theory as to what they do with a fourth elite attackman on the way?
I do like your idea of experimenting with Zed coming out of the box. I do think that Sowers, McArdle, Kirst has to be the line. And again, this is a team that finished dead last in the standings. That's why they have the number one pick. They only won two games in Bill Tierney's first year at the helm. Major reason why was the offense in those kind of clutch situations, just they couldn't get the job done in some of those second halves. Zed Williams is a guy you can kind of go to when your back's up against the wall, shit's hit the fan, and defense is just crushing you, and you need someone just to go through three guys and thumbing it or not, he gets it to go. So Zed Williams, Zedzilla is kind of that option for them. And maybe we see more long wing dodges with Sowers. Maybe you send him out of the box once or twice a quarter, you know? They like the optionality, and I didn't really consider the expensive insurance policy that you kind of started with for Sowers. So that's kind of where I'm at with that one. But I do want to move on to this Pat Kavanaugh trade, because that to me was not far more interesting, but it did come out of not necessarily anywhere. Like, if you're paying attention to the writing on the wall, you can kind of tell something had to budge there. Pat Kavanaugh is not a lefty. He does. His older brother, Matt, was kind of frozen out of the lineup at the end of that season. And what this trade tells me, like, after especially that deal, that Zed Brandow swap, is why didn't the Cannons just give Will Manny a shot at the end of last season? Oh, man, like, the fact that they still have that question mark at lefty attack, again, it can be addressed in that draft. Maybe they're the ones who give Bill Tierney a king's ransom for Kerst. I had Colter Maxey, who I think is going to be a heck of a pro, going forth to them. But they send that trade. The Cannons get that third overall. So that now they are picking third and fourth overall, right? With Pat Kavanaugh gone. And so we can, where you want to go, Chris? The options for Boston to solve their missing link to join the Nolting Holman show, or do you want to talk about the just the scintillating prospect of Pat Kavanaugh and Brendan O'Neill together?
Let's knock out the Cannons first, because I think it's going to be shorter. What do you think? So, like, yeah, they've got this question mark there, right? And, you know, I guess we might touch on this a little bit later, but we don't know who the options are even going to be between, right? Manny's locked up, yes. Because Robinson out of Delaware played, I think, one game, yep, where they set Matt Kavanaugh down. Are you, if you are Holman, are you crossing your fingers and hoping that not only Matt Kavanaugh returns and that he can be productive again at that spot? Or is that kind of no longer an option? And question/conspiracy theory, was Pat more eager to leave because he feels like he's not going to be playing with his brother anyway?
No, I like it. I think maybe Matt is trying to find whoever drafts Chris and sign there in free agency. That is kind of where my head is at in terms of, like, oh, you have this Torton winning number one pick as your lefty option who could have been included in this deal. To my knowledge, I don't think the he's under contract through the championship series. Of course, I'm referencing Logan Wisnowskis, the free agent for the Outlaws. And he would have been a perfect fit to just kind of go over there with Asher and Holman. He still can in free agency, and we'll see if he will. But to me, I still like that Colter Maxey fit. Like, don't sell all your assets for CJ Kerst in terms of, I mean, that might be a mistake if we see what kind of career he has, but Colter Maxey can score in bunches and is super slick of a player. So some people are more down on him than I think he took a step back in production last year to make way for Nate Kiberi, and I think that selflessness translates at the next level. So that's where I'm at with GM Ryan Holman's options. But you look at that Denver Outlaws offense, and they kind of got the same deal going on as Philly, right? Like, just like a loaded attack line. They signed Eric Law mid-season to kind of being that veteran presence, that swingman, interior finisher from behind on the crease, which would be the perfect fit for Kavanaugh and for O'Neal. Wisnowskis, not so much. I think they're intent on trying to see what he looks like as a midfielder coming out of the box. But, and he can play that role if he doesn't have to get back on defense, hopefully. But to me, that's going to be interesting to see who drafts who where and what Denver ultimately decides to do with Mr. Wisnowskis.
Yeah, and what they can do with him, you know, as far as his physical availability goes.
Right.
What he'll be able to, you know, the condition he'll be able to return to the field under. And, you know, he's got a lot of question marks there as well. So I would imagine Tim Sudan, assuming he's not privy to any additional information that we've missed out on in the past couple of months, is kind of going to hedge his bets, you know, set up some backups in case they go into next season, just kind of like they ended this one, Wisnowskis not being an option or even, you know, at 100% being an option for him.
Which, yeah, perfect context for the listeners who maybe you've forgotten, as I did, that he missed, like, all of last season with an injury, and that kind of allowed O'Neal to open things up for himself and have the season that he did. Chris, we've been talking for 40-plus minutes here about this PLL offseason, and I want to spin it forward to 2025 here. I mentioned the next player movement period begins on March 3rd. There's plenty of interesting free agents who haven't re-signed, but quickly, let's kind of go through some of the notable ones who have re-signed with their respective clubs. And mainly that's Grant Ament. I think certain teams would have loved this, try to persuade him, like, hey, we've been hearing how much you love attack. And but after hearing how much he embraced his midfield role and how much he wants to improve as a midfielder before that championship game, and then he had the title game that he did when Utah repeated there. I thought that was kind of a done deal, and he wanted to be back with his boys, back with O'Keefe and company. And he signs a longer deal than I think most would have expected. I think he would have expected maybe a 1 or 2 year deal to see it go through 2027 in that season. That says a lot that he's here to stay, and he loves Coach Chris Bates. So that's the big one for me. And you add in some of those Cannons re-signings, Asher Nolting being a 1 year re-signing deal with Marcus Holman as well, being that kind of example of guys that are taking that 1 year option. Those are the biggies. Chris, what do you make of those and any that you want to add?
Yeah, I'm totally on board with you as far as Ament. You know, if you are an opposing coach, definitely would have been worth giving him a call and being like, you know, hey, man, aren't you tired of Tom holding you down? Don't you want your own team? You know, you want to go back and be attack quarterback you were made to be. But yeah, it's tough to break up a team coming off of back-to-back championships. Just the kind of season they had. You know, Graham Hossack, for example, last season missed the first few games, wasn't playing, and then finally showed up. And, you know, this year he's already ready to go for the next one. I think championships really smooth over a lot of stuff and really get the enthusiasm going. Yeah, Asher Nolting, like you said, also kind of big. Staying in step with Holman, you know, because I think whenever Marcus does decide to step down or, you know, hang him up, whenever that time comes, you know, it would be ideal if you're Ashton Olting to be able to reassess your situation, you know, because the kind of productivity he's having, he's going to be able to call his own shots essentially wherever he goes. It's been a flurry of a lot of guys being reached out to very quickly. Sticking with the Cannons, we've noticed in the past, Brian Holman is very quick to kind of, you know, I think it's an emphasis to not leave your guys hanging, you know, just kind of give them a vote of confidence, say, hey, you know, we don't have to wait months and months to get this done. I like what you've done with the team. I want you back on the team, right? So when that starts happening and more dominoes start falling, I think the remaining free agents are the ones who kind of draw much more attention, be it their decision to hang out and see what's going on or their organizations being the ones who are a little more hesitant to sign into the longer deals right now.
Absolutely. And guys who maybe are closer to the end of their careers, you look at a Rob Pinnell who said he won't play for another team other than the Redwoods or else he'll kind of hang up the boots. So we'll either take his word for that or see if he can be persuaded otherwise. Him and kind of Jake and Jesse Bernhardt come to mind as the three guys who are like, are you guys back? Are you re-signing another year? Or your kind of illustrious career is coming to an end? The Atlas, I think we mentioned earlier in the show, have quite a few key free agents, including Trevor Baptiste. It'd be kind of hard to see Baptiste in perennial D-Mitty of the year, Danny Logan resign or sign elsewhere, rather. That would be a big shock to me. But guys like Kobe Smith and LSM, who you see Tyler Carpenter coming to the team and have that success, maybe he's looking to have that impact at another team now that he's fully healthy, or if he gets fully locked down with a good deal with Pressler and Co. and Chet Camizio as well. But the two names I talked to a coach with and he brought up were Matt Moore of the Utah Archers. You see that Ament deal go through and you're like, okay, well, he talked about playing midfield, but that's because Matt Moore was there. And we'll see if he gets re-signed. But again, it's hard to not re-sign with the back-to-back champs, like you mentioned. And then Justin Anderson. Be hard to imagine how much I know Coach Sudan loves Justin Anderson's speed. Again, he played a lot of two-way midfield, making way for the new rooks in the room last season. But he's a super talented offensive guy. So those are two of the biggest names that could make waves if they sign elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. The more, you know, last year they were kind of, you know, I mean, it's always kind of how free agency goes, right? There's certain players who everybody's looking at, and then other players are generally going to be regarded by the GMs once the first wave goes, you know? And so, like, last year you had Brian Costabile and Jeff Teat. Everybody was just waiting to see what was going to happen with them. And when they both said they were going back, then it was kind of like, okay, all right, let me start making these other phone calls and seeing what else is around here. You know, no offense to anybody who was signed last year other than those two, but that's kind of how it went. And we're in a similar situation here, and I think Matt Moore is kind of one of those people. You know, he had, I think he's got enough on tape over the past couple seasons that people can certainly have a good idea of some really strong output if they do bring him onto the program that they have. And it's just kind of a matter of where he sees himself fitting in and contributing, you know, if he wants to go back and embrace a similar role, or, you know, like I said, as far as, you know, winning, kind of making everything great, you know, you can also see some people saying, you know, winning is great, but I would also like to perhaps win and contribute a little bit more, or, you know, have a change of scenery and, you know, hopefully win elsewhere. Is that the case with him? I do not know particularly, but I'd love to find out. The people who I am, it kind of goes back to what we were initially discussing as far as, you know, the chaos search goes. They've got a lot of guys who are not signed, you know, heading into next year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whoever ends up getting that job has a lot of decisions to make regarding a lot of those players. And a lot of those players, who knows, right? Do they, are they all in on playing for the Carolina Chaos, or were they all in on playing for Andy Towers? And I think that is a thing that some of those guys in particular are really kind of kicking around themselves right now. You know, a lot of them stuck out their particular settings because they really liked being in that environment, and it's going to be a different environment now. So maybe they're not as attached to the, you know, the red and black now that everything else has changed around them. So there's a lot going on. The whole Chaos free agency team, you know, you got the guys here like Jared Newman. Will he walk away? Jules Hennenberg, you know, Austin Kaut. Does he want to stick around, you know, back up Blaze again? Is there another team that maybe he'd be willing to back up for? Maybe he wants to start one more time before he's done. You know, guys like that, Kyle Jackson, CJ Costabile, kind of go on and on with that. Pat Resch, does he re-sign with Carolina? Does he ask if maybe he can, does he ever want to play alongside his father? Does he prefer to have his own gig elsewhere? I don't know, man. Carolina Chaos is the most fascinating organization right now. Win or lose, they're just kind of always fascinating, but now for different reasons.
100%. Well said. And bring the rushes together. That is a D-mid, a loaded D-mid group up there in Utah with Piper Bond, Connor Marr, and Bo Pettersson coming off that championship. So, you add Patrick Rush and just that much more solid in case of injuries and what have you. So,
or maybe they play and coach together in another place next year. I do not know. Maybe they're on the same team and that isn't Utah. I don't know.
That's insinuating Coach Tony Rush is on the move for a job opening, in which case, hey, maybe not the head coach role, but that head coach has to fill his assistants, and no one better in the biz, as we saw throughout that postseason again last season. Those ice cream sundaes, man, they are the true motivators. Oh, man. Matt Witcher is another guy to look out for. It's hard to see him in non-Water Dogs colors. Jackson Morrill, after being traded back-to-back deadline day, in-season deadline day trades the last two seasons, and not featuring for the Archers at all after getting acquired, which was just a fascinating deal to give up a third rounder for. And like I mentioned earlier, Wisnowskis, it's I'm not sure where he's going to end up if he stays. Eric Law is also a free agent, Denver native. Hard to see him going elsewhere. Jake Richard, Marquette head coach, is he going to continue playing? Is he going to ring chase maybe a lot of some of those NBA vets and try to squeak in one last run? Matt Kavanaugh, the same type of deal. Ryan Lee, super healthy now. Maybe not super healthy, but healthy for the Mammoth this season and killing it. If you're reading Steven Stamp's stuff, you know all about that on IL Indoor. A lot of stuff to check in on and report on. So, listeners, make sure you're following Chris Rosenthal and I on both X, Blue Sky, what have you, and follow all things Inside Lacrosse, InsideLacrosse.com. If you like what you heard, leave a review, leave a rating. If you didn't, let us know undercover or maybe not at all, and then we'll go from there. Rosie, any holiday wishes to leave the listeners off with?
Yeah, happy holidays to you and yours. Keep on reading IL, as my esteemed colleague just said. Quick plug, I don't know when this is coming out, but I think I'll have two more things up on the site between now and the end of the year. So kindly give them a read, and we'll catch up after.
Yep, this is being recorded on Friday, December 20th. In case any other head coaches decide to step down, we will have to reconvene for an emergency podcast and insert it into the middle of this one. But as of now, check out the TFL trading cards on InsideLacrosse.com, the store. Not PLL related, but PLL has their own line, which case you should read Rosie's article about the second annual line, because that was some great stuff. The TFL trading cards are the World Lacrosse Box Championships trading cards, and that's men's and women's, USA Haudenosaunee, and Team Canada. So a lot of options you can get, and I've been seeing some pretty good packs on social media when people are opening that good stuff. So if you're looking for some last minute stuff that will not get shipped in time when you're hearing this, or yes, for the New Year's or something. Oh, you forgot to look at the bottom of your stuffing, or the stocking, rather. Mixing yeah. Thanksgiving and Christmas. That's how you know it's the end of the show. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day.